Okay, well, hello friends. We are continuing with our work in the second half of the Rays and the Initiations, that great and wonderful book, which is the fifth volume in the five-fold treatise on the seven rays, including two esoteric psychology volumes, one esoteric astrology, one esoteric healing, and then finally this great book on initiation, the rays and the initiations. And this is number 38. You know, it's been about a year since I've been doing this. Many things got in the way of my good intentions. So now I try to continue and at least give us some hints to think about. There's no way that we can fathom this book at this time completely. It is not really possible. But we can make a deeper penetration into it, and as it will be studied in years to come, because it contains the 14 rules for group initiation, the rules for disciples and initiates, therefore it will be studied. In that future, we will penetrate ever more deeply. So we've been working here on the sort of a history of the preparation for the advanced stage of development in which the Antikarana can begin to be built. When is it completed? Well, you know, as far as a human being is concerned, we might say it's completed at the fifth initiation. But of course, it goes on far beyond that. There are planetary Antikaranas and solar and constellational and all manner of Antikaranas connecting the particular being at a particular stage of unfoldment, even if it's a vast stage of unfoldment, eventually with the point from which the universe, our particular universe, has emanated. So DK goes on here and he says, I have, we're beginning on page 481, I have earlier told you that the astral body is an illusion. You know, it may be an evident actuality, let's call it that. Whoops, that's not going to do. I'm trying to regain the place where I was when my computer fried. Fried computer, it's not a very good smell. Okay, so let's call it an evident actuality. It is eventually discovered to be non-existent, or let's just call it unreal and non-impressible by the man who has achieved the consciousness of the initiate. It's no longer a factor to be reckoned with. It is dismissed. It is dissipated. Its level of phenomena no longer are ensnaring, no longer trap the consciousness. They are dismissed. They don't even register unless, of course, one's service lies there and one wants to understand the type of imagery and the type of energies, or let's call them forces, with which the average human being has to deal. When Buddhi reigns, and here we have, of course, the energy of the fourth cosmic subplane, the lower psychic nature fades out. If only we could realize this and not mistake, if only we would not mistake psychism for Buddhi or for the higher type of psychism. found on the higher planes. And as you know, I'm trying very much here to regain some of my abbreviations, so to make things move more quickly. So the astral plane can be a plane of service, indeed. It can be that. But it has no reality for the true initiate whose consciousness is focused in the spiritual triad. When the antikarana is built and the mental unit is superseded by the monastic permanent atom, and I think we've all seen this supersession or superseding, here is the mental unit and here is the monastic permanent atom, which becomes far more a center of consciousness as it is the item, the atom upon which the higher monastic vehicle will be built. When that is the case, we are no longer confined by the concrete mind. Okay. So when the antikarana is built and the mental unit is superseded by the monastic permanent atom and the causal body disappears after the third initiation, and let's call it that. Okay, TDI, and this will be the third initiation. Okay. The fourth initiation, don't I? Okay, so that's FI, or FRI, fourth initiation. And we'll, excuse me for some of the hesitations that are occurring here as I'm just getting started again after a year of many other things. So let's put that in. Fourth initiation. And be correct about it. So then the adept knows that the lower mind, the mental body, is also an illusion and is, and this is the point for him, non-existent. It is existent for others and actual. It is existent and actual for those of lesser consciousness. So it is not something that really has to be reckoned with, and it's all part of the fusing mental body, because all these mental factors must unite into one seamless vehicle. So it is not an isolated vehicle any longer, the concrete mind, and this is where the members of the Black Lodge, of course, fail, because for them it becomes the prime object of their attention, and Master DK tells us that they raise its capacities to an unbelievable level. But about those particulars, we are not informed, and we do not need to be specifically informed. We simply know that the way into the soul for most of them creates an insuperable barrier, and the concrete mind becomes the vehicle for their work, and at the same time, a huge obstruction and limitation. There are then, as far as the individual consciousness is concerned, only three focal points or anchorages, and this is both of these expressions are inadequate to express the full meaning. Well, where consciousness is anchored or focused, we can think of it that way, but this is again after the fourth initiation, because we begin to think in terms of groups, certainly, and once we've reached the consciousness of the cosmic ethers, our consciousness is entirely group consciousness, or at least whatever we consider in terms of our individuality is always considered within that context. So there are only three expressions, or at least three focal points or anchorages. Humanity, in which he can focus himself at will through the medium of what is technically called the Maya Varupa, a bodily form which he creates for the fulfillment of monadic purpose. So let's realize what that Maya Varupa really is, and we can say that it is created from within the spiritual triad, and that will be another one of those little terms that we want to, abbreviation we want to make into a seed of a fuller word. Right, spiritual triad. So it is not created from below, it's created from above. He can then fully express all the energies of the mutable cross, you know, Gemini, Virgo, Sagittarius, and Pisces, the common cross, the preliminary cross, the cross of many changes, and the cross which rules over our consciousness and our vehicles for many millions of years, much longer time than the fixed cross rules, for instance, although the cardinal cross rules for a far longer period, and we don't really know whether man ever steps off the cardinal cross once he becomes, let us say, a fifth degree initiate. Okay, so these points of focus, these anchorages, these focal points are large groups, the hierarchy. Here as a focused unit of all-inclusive Buddhic awareness, he finds his place and mode of service conditioned by his monadic ray. How interesting. And not the soul ray. I think it's so interesting when looking at the way the hierarchy is described and how the individual within hierarchy is considered a focused unit of all-inclusive Buddhic awareness. This is regardless of the ray of the individual. And in that hierarchy and focused on the Buddhic plane, minimally, he finds his place and mode of service, conditioned by his monadic ray. So you might, you know, we might think that within the hierarchy, the soul ray would be primary. It will be a secondary factor which qualifies the monadic ray, but the type of service within hierarchy apparently is very much conditioned by the monadic ray. Now, the particular ashram in which we find ourselves is qualified by our soul ray, and in that ashram we do serve, but there must be something directing the particular mode of service in that ashram which relates to the monadic ray. So he then expresses the values of the fixed cross. How long does the fixed cross last? Well, you know, in a way we dismount the fixed cross at the third initiation, and at the fourth degree we are on no particular cross, and at the fifth degree again on the cardinal cross. But from another perspective, the fixed cross is the cross of the soul, and the soul ray is really the triadal ray, and that ray, we can understand, would be effective until the individual is atmically polarized at the fifth initiation. So I don't think we are rid of the, at least the ray on which we functioned in the fixed cross so soon or so readily. And then there is Shambhala. This is the highest focal point, the goal of all exertions of all initiates of the higher degrees, fourth, fifth, sixth degree masters, and the source of the Sutratma, the source of life, the source of the life thread. It may animate everything below it, but it comes from the place where the monad is ensconced, we might say. The source of the Sutratma through which, and its differentiations, he can consciously work. So maybe the other threads, in a way, are considered differentiations of the major all-inclusive life thread. Here he still finds himself still crucified, but on the cardinal cross, and we can say, you know, even Sanat Kumara, and that's another one of those terms that we definitely want to abbreviate in the right way. Even Sanat Kumara is crucified on the cardinal cross. And there may be, you know, with every advancing level of evolution, there may be repetitions of, on a higher turn of the spiral, of what we call the mutable, fixed and cardinal crosses. Maybe even great beings who find themselves on the cosmic physical plane are, in a sense, crucified on the cardinal cross. It's difficult to say whether if a being is functioning through a cosmic astral body or cosmic mental body, that being can be considered to be crucified or not. A kind of limitation exists with all crucifixions, though we would consider crucifixion upon the cardinal cross as immensely liberating, if such lives as Sanat Kumara are there crucified. So these are the focal points, the anchorages. Let's make those words stand out a little bit. Of the individual, when group consciousness really takes over, and when we leave behind the illusions of the dense physical vehicle of the planetary logos. If you think about how our own dense physical vehicle is simply an aggregate, which is aggregated as the result of the force configurations of the etheric vehicle, then from a cosmic point of view, all the lower 18 subplanes and maybe even the lower 21 subplanes are simply aggregates, which are aggregated from the cosmic physical, cosmic etheric plane, and from the cosmic etheric force centers there found. And if they're aggregates, then they have no reality. They just have a temporary form which would fall apart if the aggregating energy were to be discontinued. Okay, so there are these anchorages or focal points, and they're all group focal points. And right now, people of our kind are doing what we can to work upon the fixed cross and to reach that point at which the energies of the fixed cross are very well expressed. That would be the third degree, and then an attenuation begins and preparation for the cardinal cross after passing through the kind of no man's land of the fourth initiation. So we are still crucified, we are still limited. Even the universal logos is, when compared to the absolute infinitude of the absolute what? Deity, or the absolute being, is an infinitely limited being. The task with which the human being in all his stages of unfoldment has been occupied might therefore be stated to B. Let's see what we have here. Stated to be the bridging of the gap between the mutable cross and the fixed cross. This is often done in the sign Pisces, which is considered the climactic sign of the mutable cross. Let's see how we can do that. Mutable cross, MTX, and excuse me. So humanity has not done that yet, and that's like the bridging between the personality of the individual and his soul, or the personality of humanity and its soul. And from another perspective, the same might be called bridging the gap between humanity and hierarchy. And oh, here's a good one, right? We don't want to leave this out, do we? New group of world servers. Okay, new group of world servers under Taurus. So the new group of world servers is that bridge. I'll tell you what, let's do, let's put it in red, is that bridge between, there's another one of those words, excuse the halting here, it gives us time to assimilate, between humanity and hierarchy. And in general, what I do with hierarchy is I put a big capital H and I make it hierarchy. I put a an HU, and that becomes humanity. Okay. And then the bridging goes on between the lower. These are just different ways of describing the bridging that lies before all human beings, the lower triplicity, the personality, and the spiritual triad. And here we might say via the Antikorana. And we'll just accept that as added to the dictionary. And then the monad on its own plane and the outer objective world. But what is that outer objective world? It could be the lower 18 subplanes. See, I'm just writing the way I usually write, and I'm realizing how many abbreviations are missing. So through the lower 18 subplanes, or even the lower 21 subplanes, or even the lower 5 cosmic subplanes, from the atmic plane on down. So anyway, the monad stands alone and hovers above the five lower subplanes. What really is considered the outer world, it depends on the point of view. So these are the bridgings that have to be made. Mutable cross and fixed cross energies. That doesn't mean that if you're on the fixed cross, you can't use mutable cross energies, or that a very advanced person could have a horoscope which is primarily mutable, or that a less advanced person could have a horoscope which is primarily fixed cross, consisting of fixed cross energies. It all depends on the stage of evolution and how one can use those particular energies. Humanity and hierarchy, well, we're attempting that now, and the reappearance of the Christ will be extremely important in that kind of bridging. The lower triplicity, the personality, and the spiritual triad, this is the advanced Antikorana technique, and the monad, from its own sixth plane or second plane, however you want to look at it, and the what for it is the outer objective world. It has to come all the way down, really, so that God can walk the earth, God, the monad, can walk the earth, all the way down to the lower 18 subplanes. But all of these extensions of the Sutratma, I suppose the causal body and the spiritual triad, they are all extensions of the monad and are all objective when compared with the subjectivity of the monad. So how is this bridging done? And this gets right into the technique itself. Here are the six stages. This he does through the process of intention, sometimes written for effective understanding as intention, visualization, whereby the dual-colored rainbow bridge and its ray qualities are visualized and linked in visualization to higher permanent atoms in the spiritual triad, projection, whereby the bridge of light is vitalized and there is a living line of light projected from the lower to the higher, and reciprocally it also occurs. Invocation and evocation, it occurs in this stage. Through this projection, we are invoking the descent of the higher energies, and when they are reached, that is what is equivalent to an evocation, and they descend. Or as it is said, when the prodigal son returns, the father doesn't just stay at home, he rushes forth from his house to meet the prodigal son. So we have an understanding there of the symbolism. Stabilization through much constructive use, much coming and going, much exchange of energies, and we've barely achieved anything in the field of invocation and evocation, yet alone stabilization. And then finally, the resurrection, which allows the monad in extension, which is what we really are down here on these lower levels, to rise out of the lower spheres entirely and to live in the higher realms. Eventually, the resurrection will lead to the life within the monadic vehicle, and eventually life upon the logoic plane as the liberated volatile essence. With these various stages, we will now deal. This is the important technical work. I remember back in the arcane school days when I was there, and as I told you, I went to the 1975 gathering for the Shambhala Impact. Many luminaries were there, those I considered luminaries anyway. And that was the time that I really began to read in earnest the rays and the initiations. After a little bit of time in the arcane school, and I remember reading about these anti-Quranic factors just at that time when the Shambhala Impact was being assimilated. So WASAC, that is 1975, and it's hard to believe it was 40 years ago or a bit more. So we want to make these stages real to ourselves, and we want to make this kind of meditation part of our true meditative abilities. It's not just the contacting of the soul, which is good and sufficient in many respects, as the personality is flooded more and more with the energy of love and wisdom, because the causal body or the egoic lotus has appropriated the Buddhic energy, but it's more, and eventually reaches to that which we really are, the monad itself. So DK is giving us, I think, quite a bit of historical perspective from the racial point of view. The construction of the Antikarana in the Aryan race present. Well, there is the Aryan race past a million years ago, and Philip Lindsay, in his Hidden History of Humanity, has said that the seeds of the Aryan race, the roots of it, really began in the fifth subrace of the fourth root race. All of this is explicable from a numerological perspective. I would like to pause, the Tibetan says here, I would like to pause here and make a few remarks anent this relatively new process of building the Antikrana. I suppose in the higher types of teaching that have been given out privately and not publicly, this is actually public teaching now, if you think of it. The process of building the Antikrana, how it was done, was conveyed to those few students who can understand it and do it. But now we have a public presentation, and that's the amazing thing. So anybody who aspires in this direction can find the necessary information. It has been known and followed by those who were training for affiliation with the hierarchy, you know, probably in the temples and schools of Tibet and maybe other places, but has not been given out before to the general public. That's where this presentation of the Tibetans, and no doubt the presentation to come, perhaps beginning in 2025, but certainly shortly afterwards, this particular presentation is a great foundation for what will be even more private, occult information given out to the general public. It was a Master M and Master KH and their assistant, Master DK, later, who did want to bring the ageless wisdom closer to humanity. And one of the ways of doing it is, of course, presenting hitherto deeply guarded secrets to the general public in book form. There are two things which it is essential that the student should note. One is that unless it is borne in mind that we are concerned with energy, and with energy which must be scientifically used, this whole teaching will prove futile. We have to think in terms of what energy is. It's not easy to define, but it is the ability to create change and movement. It is that, it becomes a force which changes relationship. Maybe I can put that down. Energy, and that's another one of those words, if you'll bear with me here. It's much faster for me to do it this way than later go hunting. So energy is a force which changes the configuration of relationship. So we are dealing with that which lies behind the configuration of forms as we apprehend them. That which has created the relationship which we register as forms. Secondly, it must be remembered that we are dealing with the technique and a process which are dependent upon the use of the creative imagination. That is such a key idea. The third aspect of divinity is involved here through creativity. The creative thread is being used, and that which is imagined eventually gives way to that of which the imagination is a kind of a reflection or emblem. So the imagination is a doorway into the reality which exists behind the imagination. So we need to cultivate this visualization ability, and this is easier for some ray types than others, he said, for the first and seventh ray, maybe not so easy, maybe for the fifth ray too. the 2-4-6 line has a natural tendency towards imagination, and Ray 3 as well. When these two factors are brought together, consciously and deliberately, so what do we have here? The factor of energy substance and the factor of planned impulse, and let's just call this imagination. You have started a creative process which will be productive of major results. I suppose that unless we really persist with these techniques, we will not know whether or not major results can eventuate. So there's a certain steadfastness and loyalty here required as we take what has been given and persistently work with it. I wonder whether any of us really work with it as persistently as we might. The human being lives in a world of varied energies to which we have to begin to be sensitive, and maybe at the time of the full moon we can practice that kind of sensitivity to the zodiacally and planetarily present energies, which we know change every full moon. They are especially accented at those times. So the human being lives in a world of varied energies, which are sometimes expressing themselves as dynamic positive energies, as receptive negative energies, or as magnetic attractive forces. And here we have, in a way, the three aspects of deity in terms of their rays described: dynamic, receptive, and magnetic. Those are the three words. Dynamic, ray one. Magnetic, ray two. And receptive, ray three. An understanding of this statement will substantiate that made by HBB, that matter is spirit at its lowest point. There is a kind of condensation and sublimation which occurs, a condensation of the more ethereal into the dense, and a sublimation of the dense into the more ethereal, and yet they are in a way the same energy substance, and everything seems to come out of the first ray. The Sutratma seems to be the major thread from which the other two evolve. So matter is spirit at its lowest point, and then the reverse is equally true. Spirit is matter at its highest point, and we have to get a feel for that so that we do not artificially divide spirit from matter, or even matter from soul from spirit. They're all really the same thing. So, this is that famous statement from the Secret Doctrine that we always have to have in mind, because it does overcome our tendency to think in terms of differentiation. Naturally, we do have to think practically in terms of differentiation, but when it comes to reality, there is one substance and one being, and there is no absolutely real differentiation. There are modifications which are done in the field of Maya, in the Mahamaya, which is the universe, but there are no true differentiations, no absolutely real differentiations. The whole process, says the Tibetan, is one of establishing constructive relations between negative and positive energies. So we human beings, of the, so related to number four, We are a bridging kingdom. And there's another one of those little words. Thank you for indulging me here. Maybe you'll want to do the same for yourself. It certainly helps in the long run. So we are a bridging kingdom, relating the various differentiations we perceive because of our limited perceptual apparatus. If we had a completely unlimited perceptual apparatus, there would be no differentiation. And that occurs, I say anyway, in what I call the post-pralayic condition. And I mean that in relation to the universe as an entirety. Post-pralayic in relation to the disappearance of any universe. So anyway, the whole process is one of establishing constructive relations between negative, positive, and the subsequent production of magnetic force. You might say the sun arises from the union of the father and the mother, which is the union of dynamic with negative. This is the creative process. It's fundamental to everything occult that we are attempting. It's fundamental to everything that appears. This is the one, two, and three of things. Eventually to become the two, eventually to become the one, eventually to become, well, the none. It is true of the activity of a solar logos, of a planetary logos, and of a human being, the only conscious creators in the universe. Now that's an interesting idea, because what does he consider then, you know, a solar logos? So the logos is generally a being working through a star. But does he consider constellational logoi and still greater logoi to be solar in nature? Well, it seems that they are composed of aggregations of solar logoi. So maybe from a higher perspective, they are considered solar logoi. We do know that there are beings who are, I think, creative, but they are far beyond the scope of a solar logos. For instance, the cosmic logos who works through the seven solar systems, of which ours is one, and then the super cosmic logos that we sometimes call the one about whom naught may be said, who has cosmic logoi for chakras. I cannot understand that these beings would not be creative. But then what does he mean by the word universe? See, sometimes the universe, and there's another one of our words with a capital U, the universe, sometimes the universe is not considered to be the grand entirety, but really the solar system. Some of this was written, I think, before, maybe not here, maybe this was written afterwards, but it depends on how the word universe is used, and sometimes it can mean a galaxy, island universes, but sometimes even so relatively small a structure as a solar system. It must prove true of the disciple too, this 1-2-3 creative process, who is attempting to bring into a constructive relation the monad and the human expression in the three worlds of human evolution. And here, the solar angel is the helping and bridging factor, facilitating this relationship between monad and the human being. All right. I don't know if you have the privilege of being part of me identifying these necessary. Whoops, why is that not? Okay, sorry. That's an important one, HB. And let us see what we have. Yes, that is the human being. All right. So, you know, we are stretching ourselves towards the soul. We've forgotten a lot in our emanative state, but we are essentially that, and the soul is essentially the monad. All of what we appear to be in our various differentiations in the lower worlds are really the monad in extension and the monad in differentiation. So, gosh, it's almost getting to be M-I-E-X. Let's call this monad in extension. And when we realize that fundamentally we are the monad, attempting to unveil ourselves so we realize what our true nature is, we will not be so taken in by appearances. Any differentiation of the monad in the lower worlds is actually an appearance. There has been much emphasis upon the life of the soul and its expression upon the physical plane, and really, you know, we have, we have yet to perfect that. We're far from it. So we have not yet perfected this type of expression. And this has been a necessary, and a part of the evolutionary development of human consciousness. And really, according to the way DK described human consciousness, the majority of human beings, are still far below that level. The majority being still emotionally polarized. The kingdom of souls entered at the first initiation must eventually give place to the rule of spirit. So spirit is monad. The energy of the hierarchy must become a force, whereas usually it is considered to be an energy. But it's all relative, and that which is a higher impelling mover relative to that which is moved is considered to be an energy. At least energy is usually considered to be related to planes higher than the dense physical body of the planetary logos. So hierarchy, which for us is a great energy, a great repository of energy, becomes relatively, in comparison with Shambhala, a force, and receptive to the energy of Shambhala. And we sometimes read about the Shambhala force, of what is Shambhala a force relative to a still higher repository of the power to move. And Shambhala is said to be located on our globe. Well, maybe there are higher types of Shambhalas on a chain level and maybe on a also on a scheme level, but certainly the entire energy of the planetary logos is can turn Shambhala into a force. Energy is usually a repository. Force has a kind of directional quality and accomplishes certain specific things, drawing upon that repository of energy. So hierarchy must become a force receptive to the energy of Shambhala, just as the force of humanity has to become receptive to the energy of the kingdom of souls. So we see that these are indeed relative terms. And we always have to know, I should learn to type, what is higher and what is dependent and lower. Always the great repository of energies are drawn upon and specific forces with effects in lower worlds result. Today, all three processes are going on simultaneously. Humanity, hierarchy, Shambhala, personality, soul, monad. Though the receptivity of the hierarchy to the second aspect of Shambhala is only now beginning to be recognizable. Now there, you know, we had our pictures of the three triangles, and hierarchy is actually trying to reach at this present time Shambhala, and Shambhala is trying to reach humanity. Eventually, in the final condition of the triangles relative to each other, there will be a reciprocity between all the centers, a two-way street, so to speak. So it is the second aspect of Shambhala force. The receptivity of hierarchy to the second aspect of Shambhala force, which is, love eternal, I suppose. See, how does it go? Love eternal, light supernal, third aspect, peaceful silent will. And hierarchy still has a ways to go before it can equal the capabilities and potencies of those beings who represent the council chamber of Shambhala, the highest aspects of it. The hierarchy has for long been receptive to the third or creative aspect of Shambhala energy. Very interesting. And let's see what is predicted. And at some very distant period, what should we say? Will it be the seventh scheme round? Will there be that many scheme rounds in our Earth scheme development? It's difficult to know what he means by distant, but he says very distant. It will be responsive to the first aspect of that same energy. So let's realize that when Shambhala is making its impact, and that's another one of those words we're going to use, Shaman, Shambhala. That when Shambhala makes its impact upon hierarchy, its impact on hierarchy, it is the second aspect of divinity which is making the impact, and not yet the first. Okay. Excuse my, I suppose there's a lot yet to absorb, so use these little moments to kind of think about what we've been discussing, because we are a long way from assimilation, any one of us. We have to have humility here, and the farther one reads in Master DK, the greater the humility becomes. The triple nature of the divine manifestation must also express itself as a duality. Three become the two. This can be understood in a faint way when the disciple realizes that after the third initiation, he too must learn to function as a duality, monad spirit and form matter. Another way of looking at this might be considered the following. Not that, certainly. Might be considered this way, monad triad and soul personality. That is a duality. The personality absorbs soul energy, and the triad functions as the personality of the monad, expressing the three aspects of the monad: will, wisdom, and activity. So what has to happen here, the duality, monad spirit and form matter, in direct rapport with the consciousness aspect, the mediating soul being absorbed into both of these two aspects of divine expression. Well, the soul no longer is sheathed. It is the triad, really. And the soul is absorbed by the personality. So, soul is no longer sheathed by the causal body, and the personality, there we go, another one of those vital words, personality, and the personality absorbs soul energy. But the soul does not function as a middle principle, thus, as we see, the three have become the two. Then, of course, eventually must become the one, and then what we call the none. It's beyond a one, but in a way it's not really a none, it's just formless. Absorbed soul energy. If I had just left the word en, I would have been fine. Whoop. When this has been achieved, the true nature of nirvana will be comprehended. A dualistic state, and one that can only be recognized by a MOW. What will you say that is? Should we play a guessing game? Master of the wisdom. One that can only be realized by a master of the wisdom. Nirvana will be comprehended, the beginning of the endless way. That's out of the Evans-Wentz book, which leads to the one. This is the way whereon duality is resolved into unity, the way that members of the hierarchy are seeking to tread and for which they are preparing. And when they become Chohans, they will have achieved the preliminary, the preliminary stage of this oneness. So one becomes truly the monad on the sixth or second plane. At the sixth degree, when one is a master, one may stand at the apex of the human kingdom. When one is a Chohan, it is said of them, they are no longer men, as are the masters. Okay, friends, so what will this be? This will be the end of Rays and Initiations webinar commentary, number 38. I wonder what page we have achieved. It began at 481. Surely must be something here that gives us a hint. 483 and maybe 484 is, yeah, coming up. So this is our pages here. 481 to 483. And then we'll have the beginning of Rays and Initiation Webinar Commentary number 39. And we will begin with page, the end of page 483. It's such interesting material, isn't it? You know, what are we doing together here? We are thinking our way through what DK is suggesting. We are associating, linking. We are creating a Mercurian network of interrelations in which occasionally wholeness, or wholes at least, W-H-O-L-E-S, stand forth, and we gain a greater grasp of that which exists behind the unfortunately fragmented consciousness that we have at the present time. So we're working our way back as ISIS would have us do, and we are leaving fragmentation and entering a state of increasing wholeness. And we will continue shortly. So thanks for joining us here for number 38, and we go on for number 39.